Are teachers unions still relevant? Do they play a greater role than most know? These are a few of the questions Dr. Lois Weiner, Director of Urban Education and the Teacher Unionism Project, will tackle. Our activist of the week is helping refocus his union. We will check trending news, ask what are the schools our children deserve, have a moment of zen, and you know we will hear from Matt Damon's mom at some point. Bring in the union thugs, let's bust some pencils.
This is Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk with Dr. Tim Slecker. It's time to take a look at the top trending news stories in education.
Trending news from Dick Hilker of the Denver Post. If educators, that's teachers according to Dick, don't buy in, guess what? Education reform fails. Here's the real trending news, Dick. Education reform has already failed. Why? Not because of, quote, the status quo teachers, as you like to say, but because reform, like high-stakes testing, school closures, holding teachers accountable to test scores, zero tolerance, Common Core, politicians, Clinton, Bush, Obama, $1 trillion, all of that, and the achievement gap still persists? I'm sorry, Dick, but education reform has managed to fail without, quote, any help from status quo teachers. You know, education reform failing because of teachers? I wonder what Matt Damon's mom would say.
Wait, what? You want to know what my mom would say? All right, well, just ask her.
It's so funny because first it was education wasn't working because of the teachers, and now ed reform isn't working because of the teachers. To expect teachers to buy into a system that's imposed on them from the top is a grandiose mistake out of the gate. It's a real tragedy because millions and millions and millions of dollars have been spent on it. But the ed reform approach, data and accountability and testing and all the things we've seen, starting with No Child Left Behind, actually was masterminded by a handful of wealthy people, I'm sure you know that, sort of in collaboration with both Democrats and Republicans, and has created all of these policies that have been imposed on teachers. Teachers haven't had a voice in these. And then imposing standards, like the Common Core standards, on teachers, again, they haven't had a voice in creating any of these things. And guess what? This is one of the beautiful things about human nature. And because I study child development, I can say it is truly a beautiful thing, the desire for self-determination. And you see it in all humans, all around the world. You see it in young children. It starts to emerge really early on. And you see it in social movements and democracy movements around the world. People don't like dictatorships. They don't like people imposing things on them and telling them what to do and disrespecting their voice. It's fundamentally human, and why don't these ed reformers understand that? When I was a graduate student in the 1970s, I read a book by the social psychologist Seymour Saracen. I don't know if you ever read his books. He wrote about 40. He said a couple of things in this book I read then that have impressed me and stayed with me always. The Culture of School and the Problem of Change was the book. He basically said in that book, and it was based on research. He was a big educational researcher, and he had done studies to show that if you do top-down things to teachers, you impose things on them without teachers having a voice or being able to buy in of their own accord, then the change will not last. It may never take hold, but if it does, it won't last. And this is a fundamental idea of democracy. This is why democracy is really the only system, political system, that can work over time anywhere in the world, because people need to participate. They need to feel like they matter, they're included, and they had something to say about whatever is affecting them. And that's what's happening in education right now. We're seeing this domination of an era based in things teachers fundamentally don't agree with overall. You know, the data, accountability, testing standards, all the stuff that's been imposed on them, and they've had less and less to say about what is going to go on in their school, in their profession, and in their classroom. It makes them angry. Saracen talked about this. It makes them angry. And they push back. They find ways to push back. Either they go along on the surface. You see this sometimes in workforces, let's say, in factories where people have been mistreated. People might have a work slowdown or a work stoppage, or they might have a strike. You can't impose unjustly on people without there being a reaction.
This is Matt Damon on Busted Pencils Radio. Please stop bothering me and just ask my mom already.
This is Busted Pencils Radio. Fully leaded education talk.
Here to talk about the state of the unions, teachers' unions, that is, Director of Urban Education and the Teacher Unionism Project at New Jersey City University, Dr. Lois Weiner. Welcome to the show. Your title is a unique one for sure. Can you explain it to us?
Well, that means that in addition to studying urban education, I also have read about labor history, and I look at labor unions in general and at teachers' unions in particular.
So what have you found out then?
What we're seeing is part of this gigantic global project to transform public education. What we're seeing is an effort to get rid of or disempower teachers' unions.
We've heard them referred to as, quote, public sector unions. Is that an accurate description?
Or well, teachers, schools are public services,
okay.
And people who work in public services in many states still have the right to be represented by a union and to have a union bargain collectively for them. And they decide on things that they want from their employer, which is a school board
mm-hmm.
or a city, and the union represents them in trying to win those things.
Now, if I define that, that sounds like that's a discussion between both parties.
Yeah. Well, what it means collective means that you're not just going in individually with the superintendent or the principal and saying, oh, I did a pretty good job on that project, therefore I should be paid $5,000 more this year. What collective bargaining means is that all the employees get together, the workers,
mm-hmm.
working people, get together, and they decide on what they think is fair, and then they bring it collectively together to the employer. They insist that working conditions be equal, and that this is an important part of getting rid of favoritism that working people experience in all kinds of workplaces.
Okay, so you present something that doesn't sound that bad if I'm listening and just learning for the first time. However, there is serious criticism of this union thing, particularly public sector, particularly teachers' unions, and this whole idea of collective bargaining. Is there any merit to the criticism?
No. I'm going to say there's no merit to the criticism of collective bargaining if you believe that, as the United Nations does, that the right to have a union represent you in the workplace is a human right. I think all workers have the right to have a union, and I think unions are very, very important in equalizing power at the workplace, because an individual can always be fired or harassed or intimidated. Unions and unionization and collective bargaining are a way that people, working people, join together to protect one another. The problem for many people comes into the picture when the union represents its members' interests as being somehow superior to or more important than the people that they serve. That's the criticism that's leveled against many public employee unions, and I think it's a criticism that in some cases it's important for unions and for teachers to confront and address, but I think it's also very important that we recognize that the current attack on teachers' unions is an attack on the profession.
Particularly public sector unions, because I think at the key of what you can offer from your professional standpoint is what you were hinting at right there. The idea that public sector unions aren't just employees, but they also have jobs that are very important to a group of constituents. So let's talk about, let's just stay now for the rest of the show on teachers and teachers' unions. The unions also don't just represent teachers, but I get a sense that you're saying that they have an obligation to also be advocates for kids and for...
Well, we're in public service. You know, that's what it means to be a public employee, is that we're in public service. And it's the job of public employee unions, of teachers' unions, to help teachers do a better job. So the question is, how do you do that? And there's the old school of unionism that's prevalent in the United States especially, but it's present throughout the world, that says unions are really like businesses. members have the right to elect people, but they don't really have a responsibility beyond that to elect officers who handle everything for them. We put our members' rights first. We put our obligation to serve our members. We isolate that responsibility out from everything else that's going on. And when we can serve the public and at the same time serve members, that's good, but it's not essential. And that is actually what one of the most militant and best known, thought to be militant, and best known advocates of teacher unionism, Albert Shanker, the way he put it, exactly that way, that sometimes we're fortunate and the interests of the schools and the public are the same as the interests of teachers. And I think that's outmoded, I think it's dangerous, and I think it's wrong.
So
it's wrong for teachers and it's wrong for kids. And we have to reject that.
Can you define for me this concept that I think has been thrown out? And we typically, if we follow unionism and anything about this, but for a brand new person, Chicago's Teachers Union is supposedly that got taken over by a caucus, is now coming at this idea of they are a social justice union.
Well, the idea of a social justice union we're seeing in Mexico as well, and the British Columbia Teachers Federation. So CORE, the caucus in Chicago, didn't create that idea.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's very important to understand, because the media and most people don't understand this. A caucus doesn't take over a union. A caucus is elected. A state legislature can take over a school district, but that's not what occurs in a union. A union leadership is elected by the members, and they are responsible to those members. And that's one of the things that makes unions so very important and potentially powerful. But for that potential of unions to be realized, the union has to be owned by the members. And the members' interests, teachers' interests, have to be defined in a way that is broad and understands the union's purpose as fighting for the kinds of schools that all kids deserve. And that's what CORE did when it became elected the leadership of the Chicago Teachers Union.
When we look back at last year and the year before, the support that Chicago teachers got for going out on strike that exceeded the 75% threshold was something that nobody ever imagined could happen. Is that because of CORE and the social justice idea of what they represent?
It's because, and it's the reason that I think that the label of social justice is, the social justice union is only partial. CORE, I would describe what I'm looking for as social movement unionism. The idea, it's not just the goals that the union stands for, it's the texture of life in the union and how the union is organized. And key to that is union democracy. You have to have union democracy. And union democracy requires that members understand that they are the union, they own it. The best example I can give of this that's so important to us is when the Chicago teachers went out on strike, and traditionally at a strike is ended when the negotiating committee, or maybe a House of Representatives, they okay a settlement that ends the strike and brings people back to work, and people then vote on it. You following me?
I'm following you.
The leadership of the House of Representatives of the Chicago Teachers Union said that's not good enough. We have to take this proposed contract back to the schools. We have to take it to the members to see. We are not going to vote on this ourselves. We are not ending the strike until our members tell us to end the strike. And the union was blasted by the media by the Chicago media for prolonging the strike. And what they did, I think, was not only right, I think it was essential. So it's not just that the union stood up for the schools Chicago kids deserve. It's that those ideals were put in place through on-the-ground contacts between parents and support staff and students and teachers in the schools. So having the teachers vote about whether to end the strike was really giving the people at the school site, which includes the students and parents who supported them, an opportunity to be part of that process although they were part of it informally because only teachers could vote about whether to accept that tentative agreement.
Who knew there was so much depth to talk about with unions? I just thought it was a bunch of old white guys with cigars that go around demanding vacation time and fat pensions for a couple people.
No, you didn't.
Dr. Lois Weiner, thank you so much for your time. We need to continue talking more about this in the future, so I would like to invite you back to the show, but thank you for your time this afternoon.
Thank you very much for the invitation. Anytime.
This is Fully Leaded Education Talk. Busted Pencils.
Our activist of the week is trying to redefine the role of his union in Wisconsin post Act 10. Andy Wadey. A teacher's union? Why?
Well, it's so important. I mean, it just really matters so much. You've heard so much recently about education, the struggles and things like that. And without collective bargaining, we are still working hard to make sure we represent teachers and education.
You can't bargain for wages and benefits anymore. Why the union? What purpose do you serve?
We can. I mean, we can bargain for the base wage increase, okay. Which is, I think, 0.12% was what we bargained for. But in all reality, the importance of what has been happening recently with unions is well beyond the wages benefits. That's a huge component. It's what our members need and want and what we look to do. But it's also there's also so many other things. We do work with committees on report cards. We're representing our members in terms of their working conditions, how they work with students, things that happen in the classroom. So it goes well beyond
Wait,
that.
So the unions care about the conditions of learning?
Oh, yes, very much so. Right.
So that's a shift, though, in one way for some people, or maybe not necessarily a shift. Maybe you guys were always kind of involved in this. However, I think the dominant narrative has been, you know, wages and benefits.
Right.
But this idea, though, of the conditions of learning, and so things such as materials, curriculum, class size, safe buildings, is that what
Testing,
you're talking about?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, all those things. Those are things that, as professional educators, that's what matters to the people working in classrooms, they're working in schools. Those are the things that they get into education for.
When I think about this, you're talking about things that matter to the community and to the students
right.
to the parents.
Oh, definitely.
And so now I start to wonder, okay, wait, I thought unions were bad.
Well, that's what people would like you to believe. That's what the proponents of Act 10, that's what a lot of the people outside of education who are making a lot of the rules, the legislation, the policies, the things that govern what happens in schools, that's what they'd like you to believe, is that the educators that are working, that are parts of unions, are just simply trying to pad their own pockets. They've, you know, living that cushy life that their union has gotten for them. And not at all true. I don't think it's ever been true. But I think that narrative that really came to a head in Wisconsin in the last 5 years is something that is patently false and that is being proven so as we move forward.
But has it, this is kind of a weird way to frame this, has it been in one way helpful to have Act 10 because to force the union to talk about classroom conditions and not just wages and benefits? I know that's a tricky question, right?
Oh, it is. I mean, I would never go and say that Act 10 was good for. I mean, it's made things just incredibly difficult for unions to do what they need to do. So a lot of the basics, the things that we have to do, collect dues, do some of the actions, just those have been made more difficult. We have to recertify every year, and that costs us money, and the Wisconsin government has not been at all forthcoming. We had to go to court to sue them to have them release the names of people who voted, which is a public record. So we had to go through that as we go through the process. So all that has made it so much more difficult for unions. At the same time, what it's done has certainly galvanized the union membership. So you've got people who've been union members, strongly believe in unions, and now they're saying, this is even more important to me because they've seen what happens without it. And you look around the state. Here in Madison, we are, I won't say fortunate, because it's the product of hard work and circumstances of the community and the backing of the community. But we have, I guess, some advantages. When you look around the state, some of the handbooks and things have been put in place, punitive towards educators. Mm-hmm. Which would explain why we're having a hard time getting people to go
well,
into
without
education.
A union, then you're going to get a punitive. I mean, this
right,
is
right, yeah, you're going to and starting to pick on all those things that really don't impact the classroom even.
Do you think Chicago is a model, that preeminent social justice union, mm-hmm. you know, where they say, look, we're advocating for kids and communities. Right. Yes, wages and benefit, but kids and communities. Right. Is that an inspiration?
Definitely. We've looked at, you know, in fact, actually, as we look forward here in Madison to making the progress towards where we have to evolve under the current conditions, we look outside to Seattle, Chicago, Minneapolis, places where they've put together some things, and we're going to try to do the same sort of work in a lot of ways, work towards social justice. There's huge issues in education. No one's denying that. We've got a lot of work to do. What we're saying is that what's been done to the field of education is not really helpful to most of our students or families.
So this is interesting. A union that advocates on the behalf of the community for the conditions that really matter when it comes to learning. Andy, Wadey, keep busting pencils, man.
Definitely. We're there for the long term.
This is Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk.
In keeping with our union theme, we asked Chicago Teachers Union member Michelle Gunderson the famous Alfie Cohn question. What are the schools our children deserve?
Our children deserve schools where you can make mistakes and not have to pay a high price. That means if you have high-stakes tests that get you into selective enrollment high schools, that's not what children need, the pressure of having to be perfect all the time. In Chicago, we have these high schools that you can only get into if you've always had A's, if you've never had a detention, or you've always come to school on time. I think that middle school is the place where you should make your best mistakes, where you're there with people who care for you and love you, and you can become the person you're supposed to be. I hate it that children in Chicago have to be perfect to get into a school that serves them.
This is Fully Leaded Education Talk. Busted Pencils.
And now our tribute to legendary historian and activist Howard Zinn with a moment of Zinn.
If those in charge of society, politicians, corporate executives, and owners of press and television can dominate our ideas, they will be secure in their power. They will not need soldiers patrolling the streets. We will control ourselves.
Want more Busted Pencils? Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Also, log on to BustedPencils.com to keep up with trending news, hear parts of the show, and nominate an activist of the week. For Jed Hopkins, I'm Tim Slecker, and thanks for Busting Pencils.